Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast where real engineers get together to talk about networking technology. Here in the virtual boardroom, we have a special place where we never have to apologize that you, the listener, don't know what a packet, a router, or a data center network is. And today, we are gathered around the data center door where we want to talk about fabrics. We're going to wave our hands at the virtual whiteboard, breathe rarefied data center air full of toxic chemicals, and discuss technical topics about networking fabric. That's right, people. Today's podcast is sponsored by Brocade, and today we are joined by John Hudson. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you much, sir. Good to be on.
Thank you. You've been with us a couple of times before, but why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself?
I've been with Brocade now for about 4 years. I'm a principal engineer responsible for doing events like this, as well as working with engineering. I also work in the IETF, and I've been doing data center stuff now for about 18 years.
We've met you several times. Sometimes I hear you called a solutioneer or something like that.
Correct. Yeah, that's a kind of a nice title that we enjoy for ourselves, but it doesn't really translate well to a lot of environments. So it's not something that we always use for all audiences.
Fantastic. And also with us today is Ethan Banks. How are you today, sir?
Hey, Greg. Here in New Hampshire in January, where it is unseasonably warm and temperatures well above the freezing mark, which is bizarre for this time of year. Nice to be on the show and chatting with John at Brocade.
Brocade approached us and asked us to start talking about what makes Brocade different. And specifically today, what we're going to talk about is what makes Brocade's VCS fabrics different from other people's fabrics. You would have heard us talking in the past about Ethernet fabrics. We've talked about things like Trill and MLAG and, you know, all the different technologies that allow you to change the way a fabric looks in the middle of the data center. But what we wanted to do today with Brocade is to talk specifically about what makes their VCS fabric different from everybody else's. And that's what John's here to do today. So, John, why don't you kick us off and start talking about, well, I guess where Brocade came from in the concepts of fabrics.
A lot of this comes down to what is the problem you're trying to solve. And essentially, what we found when we started looking at a lot of this several years ago is that the amount of devices that people are being asked to manage, the amount of things that the guys and gals are essentially being required to take care of in a data center are accelerating at an exponential rate, whereas for the most part, their headcount is at best flat. And so we have this challenge of how do we deal with this increasing requirement of uptime? How do we deal with the fact that now with things like cloud apps and VDI and so forth, that the Ethernet network has become such a critical aspect of everyone's day-to-day life? How do we meet those uptime requirements as well as meet the expanding number of devices that we're all being asked to take care of by using the same sort of groups of people that we have today? It means that the networks have to get a lot smarter, they have to get a lot cleaner, they have to get a lot simpler, and they have to become a lot more advanced than they were when we started this project.
We've been looking at, you know, in the years gone past, you put something in the data center and it kind of didn't change much, did it? The last decade has been a storage switch over there, an Ethernet switch over there, and then once every 7 or 8 years you change it.
Part of the challenge is that there has to be a push. There has to be demand for that change to occur. And now what we're seeing is with the proliferation of VMs and virtual switches and the kind of large environments, the kind of density that people are trying to achieve, you're now getting to a point where 100-to-1 might have been an impressive ratio 10, 12 years ago. Now I hear people talking about setting goals of 5,000-to-1 or 10,000-to-1. And managing that many network devices or that many servers or that many VMs without hiring a small country requires a tremendous amount of automation and a tremendous amount of intelligence. And so for us, a lot of this came down to this idea of how can we take this fabric concept and how can we extend it into the Ethernet world? And then how can we essentially build on top of this to essentially meet these demands? Because, well, certainly fabrics are something that we like to say that we're good at. Fabrics are not something that necessarily we invented. Fabrics are something that have been going on for years. You could almost argue that fabrics are a natural state of any progression in a communication technology. Once we had this fabric concept down and once we, you know, we knew we could do all the layer 2 ECMP and, you know, all that stuff, Then it was a matter of what are the kind of things that an admin does? What are the kind of things that a network engineer does on a daily basis, repeatedly, over and over and over again, that are things that we can start automating, things that we can start making simpler so that they can start uplifting and start doing more complex things and start doing more complex routines. And so an example of that is building lags, right? I'm assuming that you guys have probably built a lag or two in your day.
At least one or two, yeah.
And you know, you might agree that essentially, I mean, maybe the first 300 or 400 times you're still learning something, but there is a point where you can only do it so many more times and you're essentially just typing words, right? You're not really growing. So this was something we said, well, wait a second. There isn't actually a whole lot of engineering going on here. And so being able to essentially go in and say, you know what, instead of having to take a pair of switches and realize that there's capacity issues between them, and then to increase that capacity today, you'd have to plug in a cable, log into one switch, run a couple commands, log into the other switch, run a couple commands. Depending on the implementation, there's a good chance that traffic was interrupted while you were actually doing the cutover. And so now you've created a situation where adding capacity is a disruptive event. So it's something that you're not going to do on an idle Tuesday in the middle of the afternoon. And it's something that required a tremendous amount of input on some sort of a command line or GUI-based tool. I'm sure this has never happened to either of you. I can tell you that I personally made a couple interesting command choices, or at least my fingers have, and done damage in a data center at 3 o'clock in the morning.
All that time taken to configure a lag is dead time. It's not like connecting two cables in parallel between two different switches is rocket science. What you're leading me towards is you're saying if you have two switches and you've got one cable and then you put another cable between the two, you kind of just want it to lag up.
Exactly. When you get down to the really significant innovations, what I typically find is once someone does it, you look at it and you go, oh, well, duh. I mean, of course that's what you want. And you hit it on the head, right? You plug in a cable, you add capacity. You plug in a cable, you add capacity. This is not so crazy of an idea. And what it allows us to do is start changing the way that you look at capacity increasing.
What Brocade has in their VCS fabric capability is the ability to just plug in more cables, and it will say, well, obviously, these two switches are going together. We'll just expand the bandwidth. But the couple of things is that in the past, when I've configured port channels, it's always caused me problems, right? Because something's always had to reconverge, or the ports have always had to renegotiate before they would bond the channel. So what you're telling me is the Brocade actually does this hitless.
Exactly. Right? And that ends up being one of the key factors to it, because even if you can type 600 commands without a typo, the challenge is that if there's any disruption in traffic flow, it becomes a midnight event. It becomes something that you have to do not during your normal business hours, because it's a disruptive event. So if we can offer you a way of adding capacity without causing a disruption of flow, now you can start considering getting to a point where you can add capacity on a Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock in the afternoon instead of on a Saturday night at 3 o'clock in the morning.
What I think I'm hearing you say here is that is also a fundamental part of the way Brocade approaches its design. These types of activities should just happen without any special magic. You should not have to reboot a switch, or you should not take an outage. You should not drop packets when you're doing what should be day-to-day administrative tasks. And that's a fundamental design approach or design choice that Brocade is making.
Everyone wants to compete on port density and number of line rate ports and types of ports and so forth. But the truth is that we all have good engineers and we're all constantly leapfrogging each other. If you really want to make a difference, if you really want to produce a product that actually changes the way people do work, you have to look at how they're doing work. And you have to look at what you can do to make how they do work better, faster, cleaner, easier. Whether you're talking about adding a lag like we've been talking about, or even adding a new switch. Basically, if you need to add a switch to this environment, you walk up, you power the switch on, you run the cables, you give it a cluster ID, and essentially you're done. As soon as it sees the other two switches and knows the ID it's trying to join, it will join that fabric. It will download its relative configured information. It will automatically build its lags. And you will have added a node to that network without having to do any kind of significant operations to do so.
Now, specifically, John, this is Brocade VCS we're talking about. So people are listening to the automation and are attracted to this approach. This is VCS gear, yes?
Correct. Yes. These are our VCS based switches. And essentially this is the technology that we've built on top of the Trill based technology to give you this level of automation.
Okay. Now it's not just lag and adding switches to the infrastructure, you know, to build out the Trill mesh. That's not the limit of this. You've got more automation functionality that's built in dealing with virtualized environments.
Correct. And essentially what this is all built on top of is something we have called ENS, which is an Ethernet name server. It's basically a distributed database that's shared across all the switches. And so what this allows us to do is to do things like build a 10 node fabric without having to type 240 some odd commands. But when you start getting into the virtualized world, what it allows you to do is start looking at individual VMs, individual MAC addresses, individual units as discrete objects. Imagine a scenario where essentially, for example, I was on a call the other day with a customer and they were asking, how do I move that VLAN? And we're saying, well, you don't move the VLAN to a new port. The VLAN follows the device. And so what I mean by that is, underneath this construct, this feature we call AMP. And so what this allows you to do is to create a profile, associate it with either a Mac or a list of Macs, or even a Mac based on a wildcard that allows you to essentially use a base UI to tag multiple, and essentially create this automatic migration profile that allows you to then set up certain characteristics, VLAN tags and so forth. Configure this on one switch. It gets automatically pushed out to all the switches. And what this means now is that whenever that MAC address shows up anywhere in the fabric, those policies will be applied to it. That profile will be applied to that port. If there are other VMs on that port, multiple profiles will get applied to that port. If that VM moves to a new port, that profile will follow that VM. And so now instead of having these kind of VLAN ideas and so forth that are tied to physical, you now have these ideas tied to virtual, so that now as you're moving these devices around, or even honestly, even in a non-virtualized environment, it'll work with blades or anything.
So let me just restate that. The fundamental atomic unit of a server instance is its MAC address. So in the case of a blade server, the NIC that goes onto the mezzanine card and then people install Windows on the blade, it gets a MAC address off that NIC. In the case of VMware or some sort of, you know, KVM or CloudStack, the virtual instance will have a MAC address. Now, in a virtual switch, the server could move around anywhere in the network. And you're saying that a Brocade fabric, every switch in the network knows about that MAC address via a protocol, an overlay that sits there communicating between them. And if suddenly that MAC address moves from switch A to switch F in your cluster, that MAC address has a profile associated with it that will then transition over to the other switch. And that profile has QoS settings, traffic shaping. Maybe exactly. It's got a profile to say, I'm storage, I'm doing iSCSI, therefore that's my iSCSI port, you know, or something like this.
Absolutely. It's that level of automation that we're hoping can start solving some of the problems that people face. The number of groups I've met with where moving a VM from one server to another, instead of taking 45 seconds or even an hour if you have to change a bunch of policies, takes a day. Because essentially they're having to run around and touch things, they're having to open change control requests, they're having to have multiple groups do things. And essentially this is all because of the very manual dance that the data center has to do to essentially allow a VM to move.
The two things that we've talked about there is the way the Brocade approaches, there's a level of simplicity and elegance that you're looking for in your code to do, you know, and you're demonstrating that with the lagging. And then we're talking about this AMPP, which is, and I think if we look at some other docs presentations that we've had with you, the AMPP integrates with VMware so that it takes it even a step further. to be able to run things like AMPP, you must have some hot stuff underneath the hood of those switches.
Correct. So essentially this all comes back to this Ethernet name server that I talked about a little while ago, and that essentially what we have is we have a dedicated VLAN that we use to share all this information across all the switches. And so what you said a minute ago is exactly right. When a MAC address shows up on any one switch, all the switches learn about it. All the switches know where that MAC address is, what bridge it's on, what slot it's in, what port it's connected to. And so by sharing this information, you can then build on top of it and do things like share profiles across switches. You can do things like actually uplink this to vCenter. So actually tell one of the switches to log into vCenter. And we will actually pull a lot of this information directly from vCenter and automatically create profiles for VMs that we find, automatically create profiles for vSwitches that we find, even go so far as to create a new VLAN that we didn't already have because you've created a vSwitch within vCenter that has that VLAN ID. So you create a new vSwitch, put five VMs on it, throw a new VLAN tag on it, and essentially if when we authenticate, we will then create that VLAN in our cluster for that group of VMs without you even having to instantiate the VLAN yourself.
From a physical product perspective, now, Brocade VCS is not a shrink wrap product in a box that you buy. You're actually buying hardware switches, which the Brocade VDX switch line that runs the VCS fabric. Do I have that right?
You have that correct. Our attempt to confuse you failed. The physical product is referred to as VDX switches. So we have a 6700 series, which is the fixed port, and then we have the 8700 series, which is the chassis. So those are the VDX switches. And then the software that runs on top of them is VCS, which is the operating system and management software that basically allows you to do all the functionality that we've been talking about. We've been shipping the fixed port switches for, I think it's been probably 2.5 years now. And it was very recently in October of this year that we released the chassis version of that same switch. So now we offer both fixed port and chassis versions of the of that VDX line.
Now that VDX line, is that your own silicon? Is that as in proprietary ASICs you guys design? Is that merchant silicon?
It's one of the things that I'm particularly proud of is that, you know, you look at most of the other fabric offerings, you know, especially top of rack offerings that are in the market right now. Most of them are using a same group of, you know, very nice, but merchant-based silicon, something they bought from another company. Go down to Walmart and buy a chip off the shelf. We are the only one that I know of today that are actually using custom-built ASICs throughout our line of fabric products. So these are chips that we've designed and we've built and allow us to focus on the type of features we want to focus on, like very low power draw, automatic trunk creation at an ASIC level. You know, these kind of characteristics are things that only we can do on our chips because we're designing them and we're building them.
Now, the VCS software that that you're running on these ASICs handles Trill to build the fabric and has a lot of the automation features built in. Where is the component that would talk to vCenter, let's say?
So essentially, each switch is running this distributed database, and each switch can be configured to essentially authenticate to VCS. So you don't have to have a management server that is then, you know, managing all the VCS boxes, and then that then connects to vCenter. You essentially just pick two of the switches in the cluster and have each of them log into vCenter, so you have some redundancy. And essentially, as they learn that information from vCenter, they will then share it with all the other switches in the cluster.
It's not like a, you know, yet another box you got to buy. It's that functionality is baked into VCS. Yeah,
exactly. And
yeah, I got you.
Yeah. No, because once again, simplicity doesn't do you any good if you then add a bunch of complexity to get there, right? By doing this kind of custom work, it's allowed us to do some innovations that we think are really different. So, for example, you know, you look at chassis technology over the last, say, 10, 15 years. A lot of progress was made with passive backplanes and redundant management modules and you know, so forth. But essentially, a lot of that tapered off a couple years ago. And what we believe is that we've taken that next step in this quest for extreme uptime in the chassis world. And we've done that by essentially providing the ability to run multiple copies of the software that runs the line cards. So the line cards themselves are able to run something that's kind of similar to a hypervisor, that not to say you can install VMs on your line card, but it's similar to a hypervisor in that we can run two copies of the line card code in lockstep on that line card so that certain software errors and conditions we can recover from. But what it means more importantly is that later this year, when we move to a next version of the code, this is the platform that allows us to start moving into ISSU, this kind of, you know, non-interruptive in-service upgrades that get you to a point where you're not ever really rebooting chassis anymore. You really get to a point where you're just servicing the chassis, upgrading parts of it, you know, migrating certain configurations, but you no longer have these very disruptive outages.
Yeah, continuing to push that notion of the hitless network that you're able to configure, manipulate, upgrade, and yet have traffic forwarding through that fabric the whole time.
Exactly. Because let's face it, how long will you guys wait if your network goes down? I mean, if you're working and suddenly you can't get to any network resources, how long do you wait before you get up and go do something else? The tolerance that users have for network interruption is basically zero.
That challenge isn't so much for users. That's about, well, particularly in the data center, but in the campus, a bit of a timeout doesn't worry too many people. But it's changing, right? Because we're starting to see people deploy mission-critical apps. So you look at Brocade, and their history is coming from the storage. And if you talk about a 50-millisecond or 100-millisecond operation interruption to the networking capability where storage is running over IP or storage is running over Ethernet, you've actually got a storage timeout.
There's more and more applications and desires of the campus and enterprise environment that are pushing that, in that you look at something like VDI with a wholly owned system. If you lose network access, you can still do some things on your local system. If you're running a VDI session and your network goes down, you have a mirror on your desk. Screen goes black and you might be able to see a reflection, but that's pretty much all the good it's going to do you. So that dependency gets quite severe as you start moving to things like cloud-based applications, VDI-based applications, video on demand. All these things start making the network even more critical.
Greg, you mentioned just a minute ago, you pointed out Brocade's historical background is that of storage, which I think is a useful thing to point out to people, is that, yeah, we're talking about Ethernet fabrics here, but, you know, John, maybe you can expand on how Brocade's background in storage means you guys are still really good at doing storage across Ethernet.
We've been doing storage for a long time now. For most environments, at least that I've worked in and I've talked to, the type of protocol that you run for storage is very often not up to the choice of the engineers building the environment. It's something that's defined by the application. It's something that's defined by the client. It's something that's defined by some other characteristic that you very often don't have control over. And so what we really want to do is offer you the largest number of options possible for meeting those storage needs. So whether you're talking about NFS, SIFS, iSCSI, FCOE, or the native fiber channel that we've been doing so well for so many years, we have a product suite that allows you to essentially meet those kind of throughput needs. And so when it comes to VCS, there's an interesting opportunity, specifically when it comes to Ethernet-based storage, in that if you take these concepts of being able to add capacity without having to disrupt traffic, being able to create a 8-way 10 gig layer one trunks with the Brocade trunking that allow for this almost perfect load balancing. You take the removal of spanning trees so that all your links are active, and you move that into a NFS environment. And now you start seeing some really interesting performance capabilities. Because now you're talking about offering that NFS environment as many full rate 10 gig pipes as it wants. And the performance can be really, really significant. And so now as an engineer, you have many, many options to say, look, if I want to benefit from the low latency and the Brocade trunking and the L2 EMCP, I can still get all this regardless of what storage protocol I'm running on top of it. Because once again, the storage protocol is very often not your choice. So we want to be able to offer you as many blades in your knife as possible for meeting those needs.
We just talked about a lot of IP-based, but also FCOE is in your arsenal.
Absolutely. From our point of view, once again, it's storage protocols or storage protocols. At some level, you're getting to SCSI, and it's certainly something we've been doing for a long time. But whether you're looking at FCOE, which is this kind of newer technology that certainly there's a lot of interesting conversation about, but it's another very important tool in the toolbox of any engineer going out to deploying applications for customers. Being able to offer full FCOE support, being able to offer that bridge from FCOE to native fiber channel, that NCAP and DCAP back and forth, being able to essentially give FCOE the advantages of L2 ECMP and basically brocade trunking and so forth, and then cut that traffic over to either a native target storage device or NCAP, DCAP it back to native fiber channel and give your host access to your existing SAN. So it's all about options. It's all about giving you multiple ways to solve the problem so that you can meet your customer needs.
We talked about solving customer problems. What we want to do is walk through a couple of use cases. So the first one was cloud services provider.
You look at these cloud environments and the challenge they have is very, very, very large scale. Getting to a point where you don't have 4,000 VMs, you have 400,000 VMs. And so being able to go in and offer our VCS fabric, either connected up to our core routing technology or even in some cases other people's core routing technology, and offer the kind of scalability that we can provide, offer the 10 gig line rate performance, eliminating spanning tree, reducing latency, offering all this automation, because in a cloud sort of model, a disruption doesn't just impact one application. A disruption can impact multiple applications, can impact multiple users. And so being able to do things like add lags without interrupting traffic, being able to do things like get rid of spanning tree, it basically allows these cloud providers, whether they're public or private, to A, get a lot more out of the data center they've built, but also provide a much more seamless, always on, always available cloud environment to all the users that are essentially the reason why they built it in the first place. The opportunity for someone that's providing that level of complexity and that level of scalability, it gets pretty exciting.
Yeah, well, your VDX 8770, which I've done a couple of shows, I came over and visited you and got the detail on that. That's very impressive because of the density and the power. And, you know, I asked somebody, why would you want to have 12 kilowatts of power supplies in the bottom of it? And you said, because we know that 100 gig ports will take up a lot of power. And if we have this many, you might actually need 12 kilowatts. You don't know what the future looks like, but that's the sort of scalability you're talking about.
The type of growth requirements and the type of long distance builds that these providers are being asked to do start really taxing the type of equipment that we're used to acquiring. Being able to offer the 8770, where essentially today, you know, we're supporting 48 port 10 gig blades and 12 port 40 gig blades, but the backplane, the throughput, the capabilities on those switches means that we're going to be able to scale up to many multi-port 100 port cards and very, very dense 40 gig cards and scale this where 6, 7, 8, 9 years from now, you're still going to be able to buy newer, faster, better blades for this chassis without having to do that quote-unquote forklift upgrade.
So let's move to the next use case then and talk about private clouds. What specific features around the VDX and the MLX, I suppose, switch ranges would work well in private clouds in enterprises?
In many cases, it's a similar sort of model, but what happens in the enterprise cloud is that you typically have less staff to manage it, and you have certainly more high demand applications in that they have direct access to the IT staff. So being able to take AMP and provide that kind of seamless VM mobility, be able to essentially create a world where now a vMotion doesn't take 2 days because it needs 6 levels of change control. It's something that you can do in a relatively short period of time or even do it without human involvement. So do it based on a scheduler so that the VMs are moving by themselves. Being able to take advantage of a lack of spanning tree, once again, the adding of lags without user input, the adding of switches without disruption, create this world where you get to focus on the applications. because the network just works. Being able to get to this model where you really do create a enterprise cloud that is somewhat dynamic and somewhat self-healing and somewhat aware of what its requirements are, so that you're not having to hand tweak and hand feed and hand touch every aspect of that environment and worry about someone asking what's behind the curtain.
I think the thing that I really liked in your notes was you pointed out here, scalability with all paths active. Note, with no spanning tree. There's a lot of people who will look at that and go, really, I can build a fabric without spanning tree? And the answer is yes, you can. Well, the way that VCS works is it uses a Trill-like capability, so there's no spanning tree in those paths. And that's part of what improves the availability and the reliability of your VCS solution. Is that spanning tree is not part of a core. Layer 2 meltdowns don't happen because of bridging loops.
As important is that you're not wasting ports and cables. The idea of a passive 1 gig link was acceptable. Passive 10 gig links are not cool. Passive 40 gig links should be criminal. I mean,
yeah, you shouldn't have two 40 gig uplinks and one of them not being used and then spend half your life telling up VLANs to say, you can go down this side and you can go down that. Life's too short for that. Multiple instance spanning was a good idea 10 years ago, right? But it's 2012. You know, we've got computers to do that sort of stuff. It should be automated.
John, talk a bit about VCS Fabric and VDI.
In a VDI world, your network becomes hypercritical because if that network goes down, the whole operating system vanishes. So being able to offer a VDI environment, especially in a healthcare world, where essentially you're moving very, very large files, you're moving very, very critical data, and being able to offer, first off, all the things we've been talking about, the layer 2 multipathing, the layer 1 trunking, the AMP mobility, but also be able to start looking at other features we offer like S-Flow, which is basically a monitoring technology that we build into all of our chips. And so what it's been able to allow us to do is to start really instrumenting and monitoring the entire VDI conversation from end to end. And so for some clients, we've even produced a sort of weather widget that allows them to come into the office in the morning and look at this little widget and see what sort of performance, what sort of capacity is available in different parts of the network so that they can schedule their day and realize, oh, you know what? Radiology is very busy right now. There's lots of data coming in. I'm going to go deal with this other group. And so put some power back into the side of the user, give them all the no spanning tree, full line rate, all that stuff you need for moving large data files, but then provide them the kind of monitored and managed connectivity that means that the VDI session should always be on, but if there are some problems, you're not chasing phantoms. It's actually pretty easy to go through and look at all that S-Flow data and see exactly where that interruption occurred, where that performance degradation happened, where that VDI problem is occurring. And so from a VDI point of view, and especially for the kind of throughput that healthcare organizations have to deal with, the VCS Fabric opportunity is tremendous.
Okay, I think we've probably talked about as much about Brocade Fabrics as we need to for now. Where can people find more about them, John?
Please come to our website, www.brocade.com. We also have a community site that allows you to kind of talk to other users and see what's going on. And then I also encourage you to check out the lovely podcast that Packet Pushers did before on the 8770, where you can get a lot more nitty-gritty information on how the box works.
That's true, but then the product managers were very proud of themselves that day. They're certainly very strong. I'd also like to point out that Brocade has been a regular attendee at the Network Field Day events, and we have a number of videos where we actually talk in detail about these strategies. And we'll have some links to that and the Brocade resources in the show notes if you'd like to get some more information. So again, thanks, John, for coming on the show today and sponsoring this podcast. Ethan, thanks again. What's up this week?
What's up this week is it's the beginning of 2013, so it's time to line up the projects and start knocking things down. And I am enthused and all that stuff. And I really am. There's something about the beginning of this year that's got me all just excited and ready to roll. So
if I remember this time last year, you were all enthused and ready to roll too.
Shut up. Well, the good news is, whereas last year there were far more projects than I could bite off and chew effectively, it seems like there's a more reasonable workload this year. And so I am going on excited, and I'm going to pretend that that I'm not getting fooled again. We'll see how it works out.
Fantastic. And of course, you can find Ethan on the Twitter as @ecbanks and blogging over on the packetpushers.net website, along with a team of other bloggers. You can also talk to us via the forum at forum.packetpushers.net. And you can find me, Greg Farrow, on my blog at etherealmind.com and on the Twitter as @etherealmind. As always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.